pro-psychotic. I want you to please be nice to Derek's today, Rickard Strasser tells his stepson's only friend, a surly and stringy 19-year-old named Anders, whose mouth always hangs open so wide that you can see the food in the teeth of his lower jaw. Country biscuits and sugar ham caught in his clear-color braces. They're peeing next to each other in the Cracker Barrel bathroom. Anders has thin lips and smooth gangly arms and always wears a giant silver wristwatch. Big eyes with blonde eyelashes. Doesn't blink enough. You are the only friend who showed up for his birthday, Rickard continues as Anders looks sheepishly into the urinal. And he's had a really, really hard year. Of course, says Anders. He's my buddy, right? I understand the challenges you must face as his legal guardian. Rickard grabs this Anders kid by the upper arm and squeezes. Anders looks at him, horrified, suddenly scared. Anders' security familiar, a giant gray wolf with ultramarine eyes, raises its head and fixes Rickard with its empty, haunted gaze. Rickard zips up and lets Anders go. Rickard's own security familiar is still at the table taking video of the event. Rickard tries not to think about how sad this whole birthday has been already. Why are they even bothering to record it? He supposes there's a small chance that Derek's grandparents will want to watch the video later. Rickard never ceases to be amazed and depressed by how much Agnes' parents dote on her dopey, impossible kid, how patient they are, much more patient than he and Agnes could ever be. I'm not kidding, says Rickard. It's his birthday, and I want you to be extra nice to him. I promise, says Anders. Jesus, Mr. Strasser. Sad as it may be, it is not shocking that Derek's doesn't have any other friends who would want to show up to this birthday except for this Anders kid. Rickard Strasser's stepson Derek's is on so much medication that most of the time he's practically catatonic. When he's in a good mood or talkative, he often just drones on about his favorite video games. He can stare out of the window for hours or fly into a rage and beat the walls until his fists and forearms are bruised and bloody. He oscillates between dim and manic in impossible to predict intervals. Even though they've tried their best to treat him like a normal kid, he's also rather spoiled. You can't discipline a disconnected blob of soaring emotion that's always cycling between insane demands and panicked dread. He's not actually a bad kid, thinks Rickard. He's a sensitive teenage boy with a busted-up brain because the world is cruel. It's not his fault that he responds the way he does to things. Rickard and Agnes buy Derek's the latest video games, nice clothes, whatever snacks he wants, anything to make him happy in the rare moments that he can actually be happy. Rickard has to remind himself, one thing that actually does seem to make Derek's happy is the skinny, blonde twerp Anders. Anders is older than Derek's by a few years, and Rickard and Agnes both suspect that Anders must be wildly unpopular if he's willing to hang out with their son. He doesn't seem to have any other friends but Derek's. He's just out of high school. Instead of going to community college, he now works at a games workshop. He's not ready for college yet, he says. He wants to be in movies someday. Not that they're complaining, but what kind of kid would want to make Derek's their one true pal? It is unsettling. Anders seems basically normal despite his unctuous kiss-assery, but how could he really be normal deep down? They're simultaneously grateful for and horrified by Anders. One thing they never tell you about having a fucked up kid with a fucked up brain is that your fucked up kid is going to have fucked up friends, and you have to be nice to these other fucked up weirdos unless you want your own fucked up weirdo to be even more alone and sad. Like Agnes and Rickard, this Anders kid already has his own security familiar. He got one at the proper age when he turned 18. Now it is Derek's 18th birthday, and they are celebrating at his favorite restaurant, the Cracker Barrel. You sure you don't want to go someplace actually nice? Agnes had asked when they were planning the celebration. Someplace really special? Cracker Barrel is special, Derek said blankly, challenging them. Well, it's your birthday, kiddo, Agnes said with grim determination. They'd given in and done what Derek's wanted, of course. Anders and Rickard return to the table from the bathroom after their inspirational chat, and now Anders is full of goodwill and bonhomie, no longer so transparently sullen and bored. The five unopened presents for Derek's are all stacked at one end of the wooden table. To his credit, Derek's has waited patiently to open them, which is a small miracle. Rickard's security familiar slinks over to him. It's the same giant spider he's had since the marriage, complete with toxin sacks. Nothing deadly, of course, just paralytic, and rotors that make it fly after it jumps. The mobility and slightness of the spider makes his life as a building contractor infinitely easier. It has all the basic functionality of any other deadly gene-coded machine friend, but it can go places that larger security familiars can't go. Rickard has only been stepson to Derek's for 5 years now. Agnath is almost 40, and there was a time when Rickard thought Derek's would at least go into the army or something and maybe go on to have a life away from them. But that seems increasingly unlikely. Rickard is coming to terms with the idea that Derek's will always be a part of their relationship. "Can I start opening presents now?" Derek's asks, leaning forward, his eyes glassy. Agnath smiles benignly. "Yes, go ahead," she says. Anders cheers unconvincingly, saying, "Yay," looking over at Rickard to see if Rickard notices how good of a pal he's being. It's hard to believe that Derek's and Agnath are mother and son. There's certainly nothing divergent about Agnath, at least superficially. She's 5 years older than Rickard, but she's objectively goddamn physically delicious. He knows he got her at a discount on account of the fact that she came with a troubled child. Agnath is tiny, but she has lavish, prodigal, ungrudging, munificent tits and a lopsided smile that is always sly and makes him reliably horny whenever she flashes it at him in just that certain way. She likes dirty jokes, and she's insatiable when it comes to food, fucking, drugs, and fun. She's giggly and cruel, and she's always ready to get on her knees for him. Fucking is an escape for her on some level, from their life, from its undignified burdens. Her skin is milky and clean, her hair is black as a jungle snake, and she manages to pull off red lipstick every day, favoring men's flannel shirts and tight pants in fluorescent colors that show off how much ass ham she's smuggling. She's a freelance graphic designer, so she mainly stays at home, which is useful since Derek's doesn't ever go out and needs constant tending. Between the two of them, they make enough money to be slightly more than comfortable. Derek's sorts through the presents on the table, lifting them up and shaking them, and then putting them down again. He is grinning. Rickard shoots Agnath a worried look, but she shrugs. He's going to be disappointed, probably even devastated, but there's nothing they can do. Since he's turning 18, he will now legally be allowed to own and operate a security familiar. He's old for his grade, since Agnath kept him back, but he's looking forward to the jolt of instant coolness that he thinks a security familiar will bring him. Rickard knows that Derek's is shaking the boxes to try and figure out which one has a security familiar in it, even though they already told him, it wasn't happening yet. There's a tap on Rickard's shoulder, and he turns to find a nervous-looking restaurant manager looming over him. The restaurant manager bends down and whispers in his ear. Sir, do you mind if I speak with you a moment? He says urgently. There have been some complaints. Rickard stands up. The restaurant manager of this Cracker Barrel is a tall, wiry man with veiny forearms and a veiny neck who is wearing a pork pie hat that is clearly on his head to hide the fact that he's going bald. Women like bald men, thinks Rickard. Red-faced, veiny, bald men with wiry arms are exactly what a certain kind of woman wants. But this man is timid. He can't handle all the deranging testosterone flowing through him. He's manifesting new obnoxious vanities. He's slender and clean-shaven, but he has the tiniest hint of a soul patch under one pouty lip. Another sartorial mistake. Hey, man. There's no easy way to say this, the restaurant manager says once they're out of earshot. Man, I'm just going to come right out and say it. We've had some complaints about the smell coming from your table. The smell, says Rickard. I don't understand. Yeah, the smell, says the restaurant manager. I mean, it's a teenager thing, happens sometimes. The thing is, your kid smells terrible, like warm garbage, like an old homeless man who's been sleeping in the sun. Teenagers, you know, you gotta teach them to use deodorant and all that. You gotta teach them that stuff. He doesn't like to take showers, mutters Rickard, says the water hurts his skin. Well, just so you know, three separate tables have complained, so we're going to go ahead and send you the bill, and we're going to need you to leave ASAP. I hate to have to do this, but there's no easy way around it, you know? I'm sorry, man, I really am. Well, okay then, says Rickard, shocked and embarrassed. Yeah, man, says the restaurant manager, wiping his nose with the back of his hand. Thanks for being understanding. Rickard slowly walks back to the table where Derek's is holding up a sweater to his chin and where Agnes is trying to check the size of it, scowling at him, trying to get him to care even slightly. Rickard doesn't smell anything. Maybe he's just used to the way Derek smells. He takes a huge gulp of air and tries to smell the warm garbage of this homeless man in the sun, but he doesn't smell any kind of special funk. It feels like a goof or a prank. He glances at the people at the other tables, a young couple, an old couple, three middle-aged women out for after-work drinks. They all scowl at him. One middle-aged lady actually holds her napkin over her face. Okay, guys, says Rickard, we better wrap this up and get out of here. But what about dessert, says Derek's. I want some peach cobbler, birthday dessert. You know, let's get dessert somewhere else, says Rickard. Maybe ice cream? Derek's frowns. Okay, he says, but I got one more present left. They want us to leave, he says. Looks like they are really busy and need the table. Agnes looks around at the half-full restaurant. She cocks her head inquisitively at him, and he closes his eyes slightly and shakes his head. Don't ask, I'll tell you later. Okay, but there's one present left, he says, and I think I know what it is. Oh, honey, says Agnes, please don't get your hopes up. You know what we said, and we meant it, you know? He grins at them as he tears away the wrapping paper. Anders helps him clear it away, grinning along with him. As soon as the present is totally unveiled, Derek leans back in his chair and his face screws up with malice and revulsion. It isn't a real security familiar, it's just a regular drone toy, the kind that records 3D videos. You can poke around on the feed with it, it remembers a few simple commands, it reminds you to do your homework, to walk a few miles each day, to take your anxiety meds and your antidepressants. It's a toy, he says, it's just a toy, it's bullshit. It's a really great facsimile, says Rickard, the best you can buy. It has more functions than some real low-end security familiars, actually. Honey, says Agnes, we talked about this. You just aren't ready yet, you know? One more year, like we said. It's just a drone toy, he says. You promised me. We didn't promise anything, says Rickard. In fact, we promised the opposite. We told you it wasn't happening, kid. I thought you wanted to surprise me, says Derek, banging the table with a flat hand. I thought something nice was going to happen for once. You guys really suck. He's a big boy, broad in his shoulders and round in the middle. His mother is not thin, but she carries her weight in curves that flesh out her thighs, her hips, her ass, her unselfish Keynesian free-handed tits. Sometimes when he looks at Derek's, he tries to see Agnes in there, pressed into his features and distorted like a penny mauled by a freight train. The genetics of it appalls him. How can he be so attracted to one version and so repulsed by another? As Rickard feels himself losing his patience, he reminds himself that he has been unarguably better for the boy than the boy's own biological father. Just by virtue of sticking around, he's being the best parent this kid will ever have. Parenting is often a pass-fail class where attendance is 90% of the grade. You guys are so mean to me, Derek says, putting his head in his hands. I thought today was going to be a nice thing, but instead it's a trick. You tricked me. Let's not be so dramatic, says Agnes. I'm not being dramatic, says Derek. You guys are being assholes. He turns to his only friend, this Anders kid. Right? Aren't they being assholes? They said I was getting a security familiar, right? Anders looks at Rickard, and then he shrugs, his mouth gaping. Oh, great. Well, you're on their side. You have your own security familiar already, and I don't. You're on their side. Derek's is shouting now, and the other people in the restaurant are looking at all of them with disgust. What is the deal with these negligent parents and this angry lout who is shouting about he didn't get a toy he wanted? Listen, kid, says Agnes, next year, okay? I hate you guys, he says. I hate you guys so much. And then suddenly the restaurant manager is there again, standing at Rickard's elbow. Hey, man, I already asked you politely about the smell, and now if you're also going to be yelling... We're leaving, says Rickard. We're leaving right now. Rickard stands up. Smell, asks Agnes. What smell? We've had numerous complaints about the body odor coming from your table, says the restaurant manager. Many different tables, and now you're shouting and banging your hands? We're leaving, says Rickard. Everybody grab a box. Anders does as he's told, but Derek begins weeping as Agnes looks at the restaurant manager, furious. What smell are you talking about, asks Agnes. I don't smell anything. He's talking about me, says Derek. He's talking about my pants. I got excited about getting my security familiar, and I put my pants on before I was done peeing, and now I smell like pee from my pants. I don't think that's it, says Rickard. I don't smell anything, says Agnes. Derek cries louder. Rickard puts his arm around him and steers him toward the door as Anders follows, holding presents in both hands. Agnes stays where she is, her face flushed, looking very pretty but very angry. Rickard can't help but notice with amusement that her unstinting eleemosynary breasts are distracting as hell to the Cracker Barrel restaurant manager. He keeps looking from her face to her chest as if she's a basketball player that he's guarding. Her raw sexuality easily overpowers his dwindling authority. Is it the smell of urine, she asks him? Is that it? Is that the problem? No, ma'am, says the manager. There's no nice way to say this. It's the smell of hormones. Old sweat and young man body odor. It's a wretched smell. You can't eat with that smell around you. It's gone now, or subdued, so those kids leaving the restaurant definitely solved the problem. I'm sorry. Agnes storms out, leaving the restaurant manager looking pissy and grim. Rickard takes out $100 in 20s and puts them on the table for the bill. He follows his wife out of the restaurant. She stops in the glass chamber of multiple doorways next to the gumball machine with her knuckles pressed to her temples. Nothing can ever just be easy, can it? She asks. You're a good mom, he tells her. I don't feel like a good mom, she says. Derek's is already inside the minivan, sobbing as loudly as he can, periodically kicking the back of the seat. The box for his toy drone is in the seat next to him. Anders stands by the car sheepishly, unsure of what he should do. His loyalties are divided now between his friend and the cool, fun, actual adults who are not currently weeping in public. Rickard slides into the driver's seat. Anders opens the sliding door, overcoming the paralysis of his embarrassment. Where else is he going to go? He can't just stay in the Cracker Barrel parking lot. Anders' wolf piles into the way back and curls up with its head in its paws, its glowing eyes powering down as soon as Rickard starts the car. Agnes' baby panda climbs on top of the car to its hutch. They drive home in silence. The only noise is Rickard flipping the turn signal lever up and down and the subsequent harsh clacking that lets you know the turn signal has been triggered. Rickard likes driving manually. He gives the finger to all the self-driving cars that he passes on the road. He likes the way the herds of little two-seaters part around him as he exceeds the safe and acceptable 45 miles per hour self-driving car limit. Someday driving your own car will be illegal, but not yet. Rickard's spider perches on the dashboard, scanning the road and projecting the best route. His blues mix starts to play from the car speakers, but he turns it off. Doesn't seem appropriate. They turn into their subdivision, and Derek heaves a big, traumatic sigh. Rickard flicks his eyes over to him in the rearview mirror. How you doing, kid? I'm sorry, Derek says, his voice cracking and his chest heaving. I overreacted. I don't hate you. I'm disappointed that I didn't get what I wanted, but I'm grateful for what I did get. I lost control of myself. I'm sorry that I'm such a terrible person. "You aren't a terrible person," says Agnes. "You're a wonderful person. I can't believe the restaurant manager of that place kicking us out like that. I hope he knows we'll never be going back there ever again." "It was my fault for smelling like pee," says Derek's. "Darling, you don't smell like pee," says Agnes. "I even asked him if that was the problem, and he said no. It was just all those stupid customers in there. They were just a bunch of sad losers with nothing better to do but complain." "The food was good," says Derek's. "Thanks for taking me out to eat. I know you guys don't like that place. I should have listened to you." They pull into their driveway. Anders and Derek's go into the house with their heads down like white-collar criminals trying to sneak past reporters at their arraignment. The shocks on the van squeal as Anders' giant wolf gets out and pads into the house behind the boys. Rickard feels a moment of deep love for his bad-smelling, too-sensitive stepson. The boys spend the evening setting up Derek's toy drone. While the toy doesn't have near as many features as a real security familiar, it's still a robust little machine. Derek's allows himself to be excited by it. Since it won't be keyed to his DNA, he won't be able to take it to school with him, but he can still use it at home. Rickard and Agneth are relieved. It's a good compromise. Agneth has some design work to do, and so she retires to their bedroom. Rickard hangs out in the garage, drinking beers and playing with his electronic drum kit, silently banging on his pads while his spider continuously keeps him updated with emails from work as it skitters along the ceiling above him. He bangs along to several old Black Sabbath albums until it gets late. Just as he's getting ready to join Agneth for bed, he feels prickles on his neck. He gets the unsettling feeling that he's being watched. He slowly looks around the garage while folding up the thin pads of his drum kit and stowing them away in a tool drawer. He doesn't see anything. He pretends not to even be looking, trying to smoke out the watcher. And then he sees the toy drone scamper away, moving from underneath the car into the laundry room. He turns his head away so that the toy drone can't see him smile. So Derek's is a little spy now. Rickard doesn't know why anyone would want to watch him play drums out in the hot garage, but he's glad Derek's is actually using the expensive toy drone they bought him. He sets the house alarm in the kitchen, sealing them all in for the night. He can still feel prickles on his neck from the unsettling feeling. He shifts his head slightly, not enough to give away that he knows he's being stalked, but just enough that he can see the toy drone reflected in the oven door. So this is what life will be like now. He stops in the hallway bathroom and pretends to check his hair. He spots the toy drone waiting for him on the landing to Derek's room. He continues down the hallway to his own bedroom. Agneth is wearing her design equipment and she is painting patterns furiously in the air. As he moves inside the room, something stirs in him. Something weird. Instead of shutting the master bedroom door, he looks down the hall, looking right at the toy drone, and then he intentionally leaves the door open a crack. He inserts his foot in the door and makes the crack a little wider. An invitation, but also a warning. You've been spotted. Do you dare go further? Rickard comes up behind Agneth. She doesn't notice him. She's busy with their painting, with making elaborate 3D designs in the air, using broad, precise strokes. The warm, heavy place that she occupies entices him. He can tell she's still agitated from dinner. Her thick shoulders are strong and inviting under her flannel shirt. Her black hair is in a sensible ponytail, leaving two wispy strands that run down her jawline. Her tight fuchsia pants strain as she pivots and jukes. Her alabaster feet are planted wide so she can get maximum torque. She makes passes with her hands like a sorcerer trying to control a summoned demon, whirling around in tight circles, lost in the virtual world that her headset creates for her. He hears the door behind him creak as it opens wider. He hears a soft whir as the toy drone moves into the room. He catches the shadow of the drone moving underneath the dresser. He walks back over to the door and shuts it. Now the toy drone is trapped in here with him. His heart pounds. What is he doing and why is his cock so hard against his thigh? If Derek wants to spy on his own mother for his birthday, is it really Rickard's responsibility to stop him and chew him out? What kind of conversation would that be? Derek's mortified and sobbing, And it might not even be Derek's piloting the toy drone. It could be that twerp Anders. For instance, Derek's has taken his meds already. He usually goes right to sleep once he does that. Derek's is never sneaky or dishonest, whereas Anders is definitely a creepy little lech. Vanders wants to see Agnith get ready for bed. If he really wants the cheap, unsatisfying rush of seeing a busty, full-grown woman undress, a woman that he cannot touch, then let this sad young man have that gym crack down market sin. He won't stop him and embarrass him. It's not his place. He sits down on the bed. He opens the bedside drawer where he keeps the James Ellroy novel he's reading. He picks up the book, but he stops before cracking it open. He sees the little prescription bottle of Cult Core beside Agnes' red vibrator. His heart beats faster. Embezzling Derek's Cult Core prescription was Agnes' idea. If he decides to take some tonight, then anything that happened would be her fault, wouldn't it? She's the one who likes him to be cored out when they fuck. It would be her fault for thinking he's too nice all the time. The drug is relatively new, part of the latest generation of pro-psychotic schizophrenia drugs, meant to ice up the raw sensitivity of defenseless souls and add the armor of evil to agonized, flayed minds. Derek's doesn't like taking it. He says that even though he can focus better and feels less anxious, Cult Core makes him feel mean and angry. The drug has the same effect on Rickard, but he and Agnith have discovered that there is a time and place for mean and angry. He dry swallows two pills and lays down with his arms crossed over his chest. This has always been their Saturday night routine. The pill is a lit match inside him that will start a fire. The fire will burn away all his dumb good nature. It will make him utterly dead inside for a few hours, leaving him all smoothed out, cauterized, lean, and dangerous. It only takes 10 minutes or so before he feels the hard shield clamping down around his feelings. The tips of his fingers tingle. New streetlights come alive along different avenues in his brain. He shuts his eyes. The feeling is pleasant, like waking up suddenly from a deep sleep to find that you aren't groggy at all, but are instead full of wild energy. The springs creak on the bed as Agnith sits beside him. She takes off her goggles and puts her hand on his leg. "Some birthday, huh?" she says. "I think it went rather well, all things considered," he says. "I can't believe that fucking restaurant," she says. "Maybe now we'll never have to go back," he says. "Oh, we'll go back," she says. "We'll go back and loosen all the salt shaker tops and flush tampons down the toilets till they overflow." "Not worth it," he says. "My gizzard is still throbbing from all the brown chunks of flavorless food." "Oh yeah," she says. She moves her hand higher up his thigh all the way to the fly of his jeans, and she bats her eyes and smiles hungrily. "What else is throbbing?" "We shouldn't," he says, his eyes flicking to the dresser where the toy drone is watching everything, perhaps even recording them. "Not tonight." "Not tonight," she says. "What are you talking about?" She squeezes his crotch, gritting her teeth, really leaning into him. "The boys are upstairs," he says. "You're full of shit," she says. "The boys, who cares?" "Derek sleeps like a junkie, yes, but the other one," he says. "Oh, fuck that," she says. "I'd grow up listening to my parents. Fuck, that's life. It's healthy. You never spied on your friends' parents during sleepovers or tried to find secret videos of them fucking or anything?" "None of my friends' moms look like you," he says. "They were all old and ugly or else boring and fat, and they were all religious." "I'm not fat," she says, grabbing her tits and holding them up, blinking her eyes sweetly. "I always knew when my parents were about to fuck because my mom would wear makeup to bed." He doesn't respond. She slides her hand back to his fly and plays with the zipper. The Cult Core is kicking in. He feels numb, fun rage, yet he still has all his wits and faculties. It is a very dangerous feeling. She tugs at his shirt and unbuttons it while he shakes his head, pulled forward by her hunger. For a moment, he even forgets they're being watched. "You're all cored out," she says. "You already started." "Yes," he admits. She bends in the middle, smiling at him while presenting her big round ass to him. He hits it as hard as he can. She laughs. "Bravo," she says. "If you're going to do this with the boys upstairs, then I want you to be even louder than usual, you fat pig bitch," he says. "Oh yeah," she says. "I want you to scream like a pig getting cut up into meat," he says. "I want you to be as scared and excited as a fat cut up pig." "You want me to be your little Miss Piggy?" she says. "That's what you are," he says. Oink, oink, she says, taking off his shirt and pushing him. His center of gravity is off kilter on account of how he sits, and so he falls over, his head slamming into the pillow. She's able to get on top of him. He grabs her wrists with one hand and slaps her beautiful face until it is red on both cheeks with his other. Oh God, she says. Stupid piggy sluts don't believe in any god, he says. They believe in slops and mud and shit. Rickard turns her around and spills her progressive welfare state breasts out of her shirt, grabbing them hard and twisting them. He pushes her face down into the mattress and grabs her throat, twisting her around so that she's facing the dresser. He forces her to bend her knees so that she's entirely held upright by his hand around her throat. She moans pleasingly. He shoves four fingers into her mouth, exploring her upper larynx. When he pulls his fingers out, she splatters saliva all down her chest. Agnes' gluttony for horror and fucked up sex shit seems bottomless to him. It is actually a little frightening. There's nothing he might say or do that will gross her out. No forbidden sexual insanity or unspeakable taboo. This total freedom is disconcerting. All bestial acts are welcome offerings to the crematorium of her libido, and so he often feels like he's being withholding no matter what he does. It's as if he can't quite figure out the one fucked up thing that she once done to her the most of all. However, there's something exciting about knowing that the boys upstairs might be watching. This makes him feel like he's matching her for once. Here is new cruelty and viciousness directed both at his utterly corrupted slut wife and also at still-forming minds under his care. He's putting on a forbidden show that she doesn't even know about. He slips her panties down and moistens her clit with her own saliva, pulling her head back and stuffing his fingers in her mouth again to wet them some more. She stares at him with wild eyes, blue, crazy, red-rimmed eyes, manic little fascist eyes. I'm gonna shatter your asshole, you dirty pig slut, he says, swiping wetness from her pussy back to her ass and then plunging two fingers into her giant firm bottom. She sucks his fingers inward with her sphincter, tensing up, and then she lets out a heaving sigh, clenching against him. Yes, please, she says. He holds her shoulders down on the bed. He reaches over to the bedside drawer and gets out a squirt bottle of lube and squeezes some onto his dick in a little infinity sign sigil. He rubs it in, getting it under his foreskin and hooking his fingers to keep it from dripping down his balls. Then he squirts a generous dollop into her butt crack, pushing it inside her with an index finger. If lube is going to smell so strong and unpleasant, he thinks, why can't it smell like buttered popcorn or bacon fat? She tries to hook her legs around him. She's always testing him, but instead he maneuvers behind her and teases the pulsing ring of her anus with the tip of his cock. You're such a pig-faced, stupid bitch, he says, and you have such a curly little tail. You want me to oink for you, she says. What's that, he says, I can't understand your dumb slut pig bleats. He shoves his cock into her and smiles with satisfaction as her eyes crinkle with pain. She opens her mouth wide and no sound comes out. What does the piggy say? He asks. She begins oinking, breathing out hard, clearly straining against him. He has her at a sharp angle. It must hurt very much. Louder, he says. Come on now, loud as you can. He takes long thrusts that make her legs clench and make her draw heaving gasps of air. He turns her head to face him, and he watches with satisfaction as she slowly drifts away, her eyes losing all focus as he pumps her more gently and more deeply. He likes to get her to that place where she does nothing but drool, and her eyes aren't quite able to fully track what is happening. Once she's in that place, he can finally let himself go. It frustrates him that he has to work so hard to push her there before he's able to find release himself, but there are some dynamics you just can't fight. He fucks her into a scrambled froth. But just as they're really exploring something special together, there's a knock at the door. She yelps underneath him and grabs the blanket. As she panics, she bends his dick in the middle, and he also shouts in pain. He hunches over, sliding out of her, pinching himself. His cock plops out of her, purple and raw and wet. Shh, shh, shh. She whispers, as if he was the one doing the oinking and shouting and moaning. Maybe he'll go away. They stare at each other. It can only be one of two people at the door. The knock comes again, a little more insistent this time. Rickard pulls on some underwear and grabs a robe from the adjoining bathroom, cinching it up around himself. He goes to the door and cracks it open. It is Anders. Anders steps backward. Anders has been standing too close to the door, listening. He's wearing a t-shirt and shorts. He looks anxious. He's sweating. His wolf sits on its haunches behind him in the darkness, its cold blue eyes glowing. "Mr. Strasser," he says, "there's something the matter with Derek's. I think you better come upstairs. He's freaking out." Rickard looks over his shoulder at Agnes, who is lying on the bed with the covers up to her chin. She smiles and waves to Anders, who waves back. "What's wrong with him?" asks Rickard. "I've never seen him like this before," says Anders. Rickard looks back at his wife, who shrugs at him. He shuts the door to their room and follows Anders up the stairs. His spider skitters beside him, just out of reach on the wall. Anders is tense. He keeps looking over his shoulder to make sure Rickard is still following him. They get to Derek's room, and Anders steps aside, gesturing to the door. Rickard opens it. Derek's is standing in the middle of the room, naked, with his hands curled into fists at his side. A projection on the wall shows static. Derek's rocks from side to side, moving from one leg to the other as if he's manipulating invisible exercise equipment. Spittle flexes his chin. There's a line of drool running from his chin to his nipples. "He's seeing things," says Anders. "He says there's a hole in the universe and the devil is peeking through. He says there's a bomb and that we're all going to blow up and die." Rickard takes a step into the room and looks around. There's a pile of clothes in the corner. These boys surely haven't been watching static. Rickard flips the channel selector on the projector. The projection switches to footage of Agnes sitting up in her bed, leaning forward under the sheets and reading a magazine. Her altruistic tits hang heavy in front of her. It isn't a flattering angle, but she still looks good. Rickard puts his hand on his stepson's shoulder, turning him away from the projection. "Which one of you has been controlling the toy drone?" asks Rickard. "He made me do it," says Anders. "We didn't know you were going to, you know, and then we couldn't get out without being seen." "He has episodes like this all the time when he's overstimulated," says Rickard. "He's going to burn himself out and then collapse." "What should I do?" asks Anders. "Should I go home?" Rickard sighs. His spider crawls toward him across the floor and then climbs the wall. Rickard and Anders stare at each other for a good long time. "Tell me the truth," says Rickard. "Did you like what you saw? Did you enjoy watching me fuck Miss Strasser?" Anders' mouth falls open and Rickard sees his braces flash in the half light. "No, sir," says Anders. I suppose you must have a crush on Miss Strasser," says Rickard. "I suppose you must imagine that if you could only get her alone, that she would do what you wanted." "No, sir," says Anders. "Relax," says Rickard, looking over at his stepson. He stares into his stepson's vacant eyes, and then he looks back over at Anders. "I was young once. I know how it is." Anders shrinks against the wall, holding his own skinny arms. He rubs his nose. His wolf looks at Rickard with its ears pinned back against its head, its mechanical jaws open and shut, and its synthetically lubricated tongue lolls. Rickard steps over to the twerpy kid. They size each other up in the shadow cast by Derek's in the light of the projector. Rickard grabs Anders and makes him stand up straight. Anders crosses his arms over his crotch, but Rickard makes him hold his hands out at his sides. Standing up straight and with his arms pinioned, his giant erection is obvious. His erection lifts up his shorts to his mid-thigh. Rickard moves behind Anders, so they are both looking at the projection of Agnes. "You can see everything up here, can't you?" says Rickard. Anders nods meekly. They silently watch Agnes reading her magazine. She reaches up and plays with her hair. Rickard waits for Anders to break the silence. "Your wife is really hot," Anders says finally. "I mean that as a compliment to you both." Rickard tries to imagine Anders as a fully formed middle-aged man. What kind of woman will ever take this skinny kid seriously? "Is there anything you were specifically hoping that you'd get to see?" asks Rickard. "What do you mean?" says Anders. "I mean, she'll do anything for me, anything at all." Anders looks stunned for a moment. They both turn again to watch Agnes on the projection. She stretches and then looks at the door, bored. She gets up and walks out of the frame and then plops back down on the bed, sitting crisscross applesauce. Derek's continues to hop back and forth from one foot to the other, humming to himself. His eyes are glazed, his body reeks of teenage birthday hormones. Tell me exactly what you want me to do to her, whispers Rickard. Tell me exactly, and then I will do it, and it will be like you are doing it. I don't know, Mr. Strasser. I'll do anything you want, and she'll do anything I say. I'll make her suck my dick, I'll hit her, I'll do it all, the works, any fantasy. Anders looks at the ceiling and then at the floor. He licks his thin lips and fiddles with his wristwatch. There actually is something, says Anders. Anything, says Rickard. You'll stay up here with Derek tonight and keep him company, and this will be how I pay you back. You won't let him see, it'll just be between us men. You're 18, right? 19, he says. So go on, then. Well, says Anders, I was thinking one day I want to work in porn movies. I think I have what it takes, only I'm a little shy. Do you think maybe you could pretend to be me? Like, you could make a game out of it, and I could see what she does, how she responds to the idea of being with me? Rickard is thunderstruck by the audacity of this. He appraises Anders coldly, impressed. Porn movies? He moves over to his stepson and turns him around so he's facing the corner. Not good enough. He opens Derek's closet door and pushes him inside, sitting him down beneath his own hanging clothes. It is a walk-in closet, so there's plenty of space. He shuts the door, opens it, turns on the light, shuts it again. He walks back over to Anders. Anders is breathing heavy now. There are two rosy blooms of high color on his cheekbones. His shorts are comically tight and tented. The hem of his shorts are at a 45-degree angle. Rickard grabs the front of Anders' shorts and balls them up in his hand. Anders closes his eyes, his tongue practically hanging out of his wet mouth. May I see, asks Rickard. If I'm going to pretend to be you, I have to be convincing. Anders nods furiously. Rickard pulls down Anders' shorts and underwear, stretching them out and letting them fall. Anders' cock sticks out, bending upward. It is hilariously large on his attenuated, pasty body. It glistens pink and imposing, the size of Rickard's own forearm. It is as if Anders' cock is a ravenous tumor that has been starving him of nutrients. It is mushroomed in the darkness, flourishing superabundantly in secret. Jesus Christ, says Rickard. I want to know what Miss Strasser would say if you pretended to be me, says Anders. I want to know if she'd like it or not. I think maybe it would help with my shyness. Rickard can't help staring at Anders' massive cock. How is Anders still conscious? It must take a few pints of blood to keep the thing stiff. Surely he must at least be woozy. Rickard gets down on one knee, lifting up Anders' shirt to his belly button. Anders' balls have straggly, wispy hairs. He sub-vocalizes the commands, and his spider behind him starts snapping pictures. You're gonna make some lady very happy someday, says Rickard. Porno movies, huh? Will you do it, Mr. Strasser? Rickard gets to his feet. All right, kid, I'll pretend to be you. No promises that it'll go how you want. We'll see what happens. He points at the closet door. When we're done, says Rickard, let him out of there and put him in his bed. Anders nods. Rickard leaves the room. As soon as he starts walking down the stairs, the enormity of what Anders has proposed hits him. The cult core burns up most of his moral reservations, but there are still some logistical difficulties. Agnith slumps down in the bed and covers herself when he returns. When she sees that it is just him, she gets excited again and starts crawling toward him on all fours across the bed. She has put her hair in pigtails while she has been waiting. It was nothing, says Rickard. Derek's was having one of his little episodes. I took care of it. Thank you, says Agnes. It has been a stressful day for everyone. Do you want to know something funny, says Rickard, sliding back into bed and kissing his wife behind the ear, gently caressing her throat with one hand. What, says Agnes. Get down on the fucking floor, pig bitch, and I'll tell you, says Rickard. Piggies aren't allowed in bed. Agnes plops down by his feet. He takes off his robe and she begins slowly stroking his cock. What happened to the pig nose I bought for you, piggy? The string broke, she says, last time. You look best with your pig nose on and your mouth bright red like a clown, he says. We'll have to order another one, she says. Make a pig nose with your fingers then, he says. She smushes her nose with two fingers, looking at him lovingly. Squatting on her haunches, she becomes a pile of tits and ass with a beautiful face melting on top, her clear blue eyes glistening above her manually upturned snout. Here's something funny, says Rickard. When I went up there, that Anders kid had a giant boner. He was trying to hide it from me, but I could still see it. Teenage boys, says Agnith nervously. Suck my cock, pig, and don't try to talk. Piggies don't have a human voice box. Anders is an adult. He can vote. He can pay taxes. Anders does as she is told, licking his balls and awkwardly fitting his cock fully into her mouth, still lifting her nose. She makes a mess on the floor with her slobber. They must have been watching porn or something, says Rickard. But when I say giant boner, I mean I could see it lifting up his shorts. His dick is as big as my arm. That wispy punk is 100% dick. Oh yeah, says Agnith, sucking harder. Rickard can tell she's getting excited. He looks around for the toy drone. He sees a gleam under the nightstand, and he smiles at it. It was so big that I bet you couldn't even fit it in your ass. It's a real pussy dick. Not your garden variety ass dick like you might expect from someone of his age. I'll be honest, I have an ass dick myself, but not him. You're such a piggy slut that I bet you would come as soon as he rammed it into you. I've seen it before, admits Agnith. Her chin is covered with spittle. Her tits and belly glisten with her own dripping saliva. Oh yeah, he says, rubbing spit into her face and then pinching one of her tits so hard she begs him to stop. Where, he says. He's over here all the time, says Agnes. He's always getting aroused around me. I think he wants me to see it. It's hard to fucking miss. Oh yeah, says Rickard. Do you think he knows how much you like big nerdy pussycock and your hungry piggy snatch? I saw him jacking off in the upstairs bathroom once, said Agnes. The door was cracked. I don't know if he knows I was looking or not. I watched him until he was finished, and then I went downstairs and vibed myself off. What do you think about that? Rickard lifts her up and tosses her onto the bed. She moans beneath him, writhing. He flips her around so that she's facing the dresser where the toy drone hides. She lifts up her nose for him again. Oinks, 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 and he slips his cock into her. She's so wet that he slides out almost immediately. He has to push her down further so he can get a better angle. He fucks her hard and fast, short, sharp little strokes that pop her up off the bed and make her squeal. He holds on to her tits for dear life. He can feel himself about to come. He tries to slow down. You want that twerp's animal cock inside you, says Rickard. He's half your size. He's half my age, says Agnith. He grinds her head into the pillow, grinning now at the toy drone under the dresser. His own spider climbs on top of Agnith's purple panda baby. The panda lazily licks its paw while his spider snaps pictures and takes video. That kid would absolutely fuck you if you asked, he says. A friend for Derek's and a friend for you. If he knew what a slutty, hungry pig you are, he'd have done it already. He's got plenty of opportunities, says Agnith. Now Rickard can't stop himself. He comes, groaning, his whole body and soul ripping out through the hard nugget of his prostate. His ass cheeks shudder as he squeezes the burning contents of his throbbing balls into his screaming wife. They breathe together for a while, saying nothing. They lay side by side. Agnith tucks herself under his hairy arm and makes soft little happy noises. He can tell she's still tense. He can tell she hopes he's not done. Rickard rolls over, looking over at the door to their room, half expecting another knock. He gets up and walks over to the dresser, opens one of the drawers. What's that? She asks. What are you getting? He grins at her as he straps on an old wristwatch from his army days. It is heavy, stainless steel. Miss Strasser, I know things have not been easy for you on account of your life's travails, he says in his nerdiest Anders voice. But do you mind if I eat your pussy in order to show you that I understand? She spreads her legs for him. He buries his face between her legs. He plays with one of her tits as he works, using the hand with the wristwatch on it to squeeze her nipples in rhythm. She grabs the wristwatch as she contorts in pleasure. Thank you for your empathy, Anders, she says. Now take your time. Don't rush. Rickard speeds up, putting pressure on her clit with his bottom lip, squeezing it, flicking it with his tongue, burying his face in the meat of her. She fondles the big wristwatch lovingly, pressing the cold steel between her sybaritic tax-and-spin breasts as she grips his head tighter with her soft knees. It isn't long before she arches her spine and screams, nearly breaking the wristwatch band. I'm coming, as she pulses in his mouth, once, twice, 10 times, yanking on the wristwatch over and over again like the cord of a train whistle, grinding herself into his wet chin and hungry lips.